Welcome to a special Voice of the Public on KRWG and KRWG.org. I'm Edmundo Resendez. Today, we will discuss open primaries in New Mexico, and we'll take your calls regarding the push to create an open primary election system in New Mexico. Currently, independents cannot vote in New Mexico primaries, and some say that it disenfranchises voters. Our guests include Las Cruces City Councilor Greg Smith, himself an independent, and New Mexico Republican Party Communications Director Tucker Keene. What do you think? Give us a call at 575-646-2212 or send us your questions or comments using Twitter or Facebook. With primaries right around the corner in New Mexico, what are the benefits of an open primary and what are some opposing viewpoints? Join us for a special Voice of the Public on KRWG and KRWG.org. Good afternoon, and welcome to a special Voice of the Public on KRWG and KRWG.org. I'm Edmundo Resendez. 646-2212 is the number to call in. Today's topic, open primaries in New Mexico. My guests today are, we have council member for the Las Cruces, Greg Smith. And on the phone with us, we have Tucker Keene calling in from New Mexico, the New Mexico Republican Party. He is the communications director. Tucker, good afternoon.
Hello.
Well, let's get things started off with discussing what open primaries are all about and what closed primary, the differences and where people can vote, what they can do during election times. Greg, why don't we start out with you to give us your position on open primaries in New Mexico and what is your relationship with open primaries or New Mexico open primaries?
Well, thank you, Edmundo. And what I'm seeing happening here is we have a large number of people choosing to register with neither party, and that number is growing. As of last count, that was about 250,000 people in New Mexico, and that's a huge number to not have the opportunity to vote in the primaries. So I've talked with Bob Pearls of New Mexico open primaries, but I am not affiliated with them. But certainly we have shared concerns about the number of people who are disenfranchised from being able to vote. And I believe we share a similar belief that the top two open primaries, which are currently being used in California and Washington State, so not all open primaries are the same. Somebody was saying, well, the open primaries have impacted this election and some of the primaries that have happened so far. But those are open primaries where somebody who's an independent gets to vote in a Democratic primary or a Republican primary, and I think that's a very different animal.
And we're going to be talking about that because there's some case studies or situations that have occurred in the past. Tucker, same question to you. What is the position of the New Mexico Republican Party regarding open primaries in New Mexico?
We are wholeheartedly against open primaries. We think that Republican nominees should represent the collective choice of Republican voters and only Republican voters. And handing over the election process, the nomination process, to those who are not registered Republicans only serves to kind of cede control of the party message to those who may not have the party's best interest at heart.
According to New Mexico open primaries, and again, you're not a representative of them, they claim that 240,000 registered voters in New Mexico are being denied their rights to cast a vote in the primary elections. Is this number close, accurate, or way off?
The number I saw was from 2014, and it showed 241,000 at that point. My understanding is that the numbers have continued to go up, and I rounded off. Unfortunately, I chose the five instead of the four. But I know that it is in 2014, it was in excess of 240,000 voters. And I do want to point out that where your other guest has mentioned, the primary process. One of the problems that I have with this is that with the current situation is that we as taxpayers pay tax dollars for the primaries, and yet a significant portion, a growing portion of the voters are not allowed to participate in that process. I understand the concern about a Republican primary then being undermined by people coming in, or a Democratic primary, but if we're going to pay our tax dollars for this, I feel very strongly that it needs to be accessible to all registered voters. And so that's the huge distinction between an open primary that allows somebody who's not registered with one party or another to go to their primary and vote in their primary, as opposed to a top two primary where everybody is on the same ballot and the top two then go on to the general election. That's a distinction that's got to be made again and again and again.
Well, Tucker, let's look at that number, 240,000 registered voters in New Mexico, as this organization claims. What are you seeing as far as numbers go? Are you seeing more registered Republicans and Democrats versus independents? What trends are you seeing from where you sit?
I don't have any numbers on that in front of me right now, but I will say I thought it was very interesting that Councilman Smith chose the word choose not to register, because I think that's important. I don't really want to characterize this as disenfranchisement, because disenfranchisement to me kind of evokes this sense that this is kind of beyond the voter's control. A primary election doesn't prevent anyone from voting. It just says that you have to choose to register with a party first, and that's a very easy process. You can do it online now. So I wouldn't say that we're disenfranchising voters who are not Republicans or Democrats. We're just saying that, you know, you have to choose to be a Republican or a Democrat to vote in one of these primaries. And that's, like I said, a very easy system to kind of, a very easy process to go through with.
Well, let's look at the history of open primaries. You know, how far does it go where states started going to open primaries versus closed primaries?
Well, a lot of this started back in the early 1970s, when there unfortunately was a history of people, when the primary systems were much more open then, people going and crossing over and voting for the weaker candidate and that sort of thing. And so the closed primaries were then instituted, I think, pretty much universally, except for maybe in Louisiana, to prevent that from happening. The open primary, there have been court cases and things like that starting, I think, around 2000. I mean, some of those cases started around the year 2000, 2004. And so some of those were thrown out for one reason or another, but they started getting cases where, and as I said, California and Washington currently have the top two open primary, which is a lot, in my mind, a lot fairer way to approach something like this. As far as choice, perhaps New Mexico shouldn't offer people the choice of not choosing a party if we're going to say that the only way you get to vote in a primary, which you do pay your taxes for, is to align with one party or the other. But we have a lot of young people. We have a lot of people who have been voters for a while choosing not to align with a party and yet being stuck with, in the general election, the choices that have been made in the primaries. And certainly you have the instance of where one of our state representatives from this area and one of our county commissioners from this area, in both of those cases, the decision's going to be made in the primary. They're all Democratic nominees or candidates for those offices. That won't even be available for Republicans or independents to vote on, other than to confirm what's been decided in the primary in the general election.
575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. If you have a question, you can call in right now, or you can also go to Facebook and Twitter, where we are taking social media calls. Now, Tucker, I'm a traditionalist. You know, I grew up in Houston being told it was Republican or Democrat, and that's the way it went. And, you know, I registered the way I did. And over time, open primaries didn't occur to me. You know, it was not something that was new to me until, you know, you start growing up, you start hearing discussions. You know, how is the future of the Republican Party looking at some of these younger voters who feel that they would prefer not to identify with either party, and how do you appeal, or how are you working to appeal to them?
Well, I think we've got a lot of youth outreach programs here at the Republican Party, and we have a very active number of college kids here, in especially in the Albuquerque area, which is where I'm located, and we're working hard to get those voters, but I don't think that the open primary system is necessarily the way to get them. We're working on all sorts of other things as far as you know, we've got debate watch parties going on at the colleges and things like that. That's, you know, we're trying to make ourselves known and make ourselves a presence and tell young voters, and I'm only 23 myself, I identify as a young voter. We're trying to tell them what the Republican Party message is and why it's better for them than the other side. And I don't think that the open primary system really necessarily has much of an effect on that.
But as we talk about this and we look at the realities, is that some of these younger voters are looking to, you know, have a different voice and have their voice included in this. And as they look to, you know, register as independents, do they realize that by registering as independents that they cannot vote in primaries?
Oh, I think that's pretty widely understood. I mean, it doesn't. If I was registering an independent, it wouldn't immediately occur to me that I was that I had the ability to vote in a primary for the Democrats or the Republicans. I know, actually, I grew up in Massachusetts where we did have an open primary, and I actually started my career in Texas where, again, it's an open primary. And, you know, what I saw there was a lot of kind of strategic voting by the other side. You know, like my Democrat friends in Texas would switch over to the Republican, you know, they would vote Republican primaries to kind of, because they knew it was kind of tantamount to election. And it really kind of, you know, they wanted to affect the nominee, and I think that kind of delegitimizes that nominee for a lot of more, you know, Republican voters.
In the recent legislature, there was House Bill H.J.R. 12. That bill would have opened the door to open primaries in New Mexico. Greg, what happened to that bill, and, you know, what's the next step?
Well, I spoke with some members of the House who were in part of that discussion, and frankly, I actually got indication of support for that open primary vote from a member of the committee where it died. And my understanding is that the governor's office called and basically called on all good Republicans to toe the party line and say no to that particular bill. So it was a split along party lines, and in the House, the Republican Party has a majority, and so in that committee there was a majority of Republicans, and so by a strict party line vote, it was defeated. You know, one of those things, but to me, what I saw happening there was an indication from a Republican representative that this made sense. And then the vote happened, and that Republican representative voted as the governor had said that Republican representative needed to vote. That's an unfortunate aspect to a discussion that I think ought to be happening on the merits of what it does. And I will go back to my point that where it is regularly mentioned that, okay, so how come these independents want to vote for Republicans or Democrats? And the reality is, I think a lot of the independents want to vote for the best person for that position. And that person might be an independent, that person might be a socialist, that person might be a Republican or a Democrat or a Green Party member. The reality is, for a lot of independent voters, it's not about the party affiliation. It's about trying to get the best people in. And I think we're suffering in this whole country, and particularly in New Mexico, because we're simply saying that it has to be a party affiliation. We're not allowing for that divergent or out-of-the-box thinking. And New Mexico really very much needs to get beyond the this is the way we've always done it kind of thinking to accomplish what we need to do to get beyond some of the problems we're experiencing.
Tucker, you know, you can only be here today till about 1:40 or so. So if people have questions to ask
I'll
Tucker...
I'll be able to stay long.
Okay, cool. But 646-2212, 646-2212-575. This is Voice of the Public. I'm Edmundo Resendez. Today we are discussing open primaries in New Mexico. And Tucker, you know, as I read through the issues regarding open primaries, I look at party lines, and as Councilman Smith just mentioned, you know, the voting along party lines. For you as a representative of the Republican Party, what are the benefits for the Democrats to be in favor of open primaries?
Well, there are a lot of, in favor of open primaries?
In favor of open primaries, yes.
I can't really speak for the Democratic Party. Obviously, I'm not a member. I don't work for them. I don't know what their thinking is behind supporting the open primary system.
Well, you know, some of the benefits that are claimed by people that are proponents for open primaries include, you know, helping the political party select a candidate who's most likely to win a general election, you know, by consulting a considerable number of those who are likely to vote for the party's candidates. Is that something that makes sense to you, or what's your opinion on that statement?
Well, what I would say is that there's a lot of opportunity for kind of sabotage in an open primary system, and there may be some independents who want to vote Republican and want to vote for a nominee they think would be more electable, but there's also a lot of independents who may, you know, want to vote for the weakest Republican in an attempt to, you know, because they align more with the Democrats. And I think there's a number of cases of that happening. Back in 2008, after the Republican presidential race was decided, there was a big push for Republicans to cross over and vote for Hillary over Obama because they viewed Hillary as a more kind of, you know, easy to defeat candidate in the general election. Imagine if Hillary had won the nomination after that, how angry the Democrat base would have been. That's one of the kind of the crucial arguments for me is that, you know, if we allow this process to be opened up, then, you know, we can get a candidate that doesn't really reflect what Republicans want or what Democrats want. And that can have all sorts of negative effects.
Let's take a call from Randy. Randy, good afternoon, and welcome to the Voice of the Public. Randy.
Yes.
You have a question for our guests.
Yeah, sure. I can just weigh in as well. You know, as an individual and as an independent, as a registered independent, I stand wholeheartedly behind Greg Smith in his perception of what this is about. You know, the concept that we're not disenfranchising voters is inaccurate. We are, in fact, disenfranchising as many as 250,000 voters from participating in the primaries, which, again, as Greg pointed out, we do pay for. You know, and if you say, well, they can be Republican or Democrat, that doesn't cut it. We're telling people that they have to be involved or be aligned with one party or another. Not in this country. You know, it's an unfortunate evolution. You know, and this idea that in order to protect ourselves, in order to keep us safe from voter manipulation, we've got to start disenfranchising people. You know, I think that's a spurious argument. It's 16 people, whether you're a Republican, a Democrat, an independent, or a Green Party, or whatever party you align with, have the right and the privilege in this country to vote their conscience. And anything that impairs that is a suppression of freedom against the American people. How about that for a point of view?
Well, do you have a specific question for Tucker or for Greg?
Yeah. What does it take? What does it take for us to recognize this? And by the way, I would suggest an interesting book called No Debate by George Farah, F-A-R-A-H, that defines very clearly and specifically how and why both the Republicans and the Democrats want to constrict the debates and the considerations to solely their points of view. It is an astonishing abomination of freedom in this country. So, how do we fix it? How about that?
Okay. Randy, thank you very much for your call. 646-2212, 575, 646-2212. Samantha is checking out our social media, Facebook and Twitter. So how about that, Tucker? How do we fix the system? Is there a compromise that can be seen coming down the road to look at perhaps, you know, hybrid primaries?
Well, what would you mean by a hybrid primary? I mean, there's a couple different forms of open primaries. There's some where, you know, Democrats can vote in Republican primaries and Republicans vote in Democrat primaries. There's a top two system Smith was talking about earlier, and then there's the, you know, there's just letting independents pick between the two parties to, you know, to primary with. Is there a specific? I couldn't really hear his question, honestly.
Oh, his question was, is there a fix? I mean, is there a compromise to look at how you can, you know, work with open primaries and look to have your points of view? And, you know, again, during the last legislative session, it didn't come up for vote. It just was in committee where it was voted down along party lines. Is this, you know, what's the future discussion of open primaries? Is there room for discussion?
I mean, I think there's going to continue to be a big discussion. I mean, obviously, our party is not, you know, uniform behind this. You know, there's obviously some people who disagree with us on our side, and I'm sure there's some people who disagree with Councilman Smith on his side. And, you know, I'm sure there's going to be continue to be a kind of robust debate on this issue, but our position as the party is not going to change.
Councilman Smith?
Well, certainly. You know, it made it through Judiciary Committee and, or no, made it through Elections Committee, and then it went to Judiciary, and Judiciary is where it died this year. But certainly I would expect that it will come up again. But meanwhile, there's also a court case, because basically there is a very strong feeling that people are being disenfranchised from their vote. And we have an unfortunate history of that in the United States. In the early history, most states only allowed white property owners. There were a few exceptions, but basically you needed to be white, you needed to be male, and you needed to be a property owner to vote. That started changing in 100 and some odd years ago. Certainly in 1870, when the 15th Amendment was passed, that extended the right to men regardless of their race or color. And then in 1920, less than 100 years ago, the 20th Amendment extended that right to women. Certainly after that, we had the Indian Citizenship Act, because a number of Indians were not allowed to vote. And in 1961, it was extended to citizen residents of Washington, D.C. They couldn't vote in presidential elections until 1961. And finally, in 1971, 18-year-olds got the right to vote. So we have a history of adjusting how we do this. But I think the primary process, really seriously, if the Republicans and or the Democrats want to continue to have a sort of an exclusive club for who gets to vote in their primaries, perhaps they should pay for them themselves rather than using tax dollars. Otherwise, I think the process has to be opened up. We have to say, if this is a public process which we are all paying for, then the process has to be more open. And again, I will point out there are huge differences between simply opening it up so people can cross over to vote in other people's primaries, or so that independents can choose between those, and the top two process, which allows everyone to vote on the same ballot.
575-646-2212, Facebook and Twitter. Margaret, you have a question regarding the process of open primaries. Good afternoon, Margaret.
Oh, you answered my question in the beginning, but I could also ask at this point the need for primaries in New Mexico. How important are they in general?
Tucker?
I'm sorry, I really, for some reason, I'm not able to hear these people calling in.
Okay, sorry about that. We'll try to make some adjustments. The question she has is, how important is it to have open primaries
or just primaries
in New Mexico? As many of us know, our primaries do not come until June this year. And for many, we thought that by June, the election would have been decided, but it looks like we might have an impact.
Absolutely. This year is very interesting in that sense. That, you know, this could be the one year where a late primary is actually very important, because we might be the decisive vote. But I guess what I'd say, that's a slightly different issue. I guess what I'd say is that obviously for the presidential race, it is more beneficial to be earlier, usually, as your issues kind of that, you know, that are important locally get more play nationally and the candidates pay more attention to them. I don't think any of the Republican candidates even have offices in New Mexico yet. But, I mean, the open primary is more than just about, or the primary is more than just about the presidential race. There's obviously a lot of local races, and the late date doesn't really have as much of an effect on those. In fact, it gives people more time to kind of, you know, weigh out their different options in the primaries.
Vicki on line three, good afternoon, Vicki. You have a comment for us. Vicki? All right, 575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. As we look at...
I didn't get the chance to weigh in on what the primaries will do for us, and I would just simply like to say that one of the options that's been proposed is a system for elections where you don't even have a primary, that basically all of this process takes place, it's open and everybody votes, and then basically if somebody gets a clear majority of the votes, that person then wins that election. And if
that's what happens in Louisiana, right?
I believe that might be what Louisiana has. And certainly what happens then is that you get one shot at voting unless there's a need for a runoff. And so I do think that there is a role for the primaries to play that allows people to weigh in with their conscience to vote as they, because so often people say, well, I'm going to vote for so-and-so only because I think he or she is electable and not because I think he or she is the best person for the job. And so there's this opportunity with the primaries to go ahead and vote your conscience and say, this is who I think ought to be there. And then in the general election to vote your choice between the two or however many actually end up in the general. And I think that that, you know, there's that, that distinction, the primary actually allows us an opportunity to help refine the process and help refine how we vote. I just want to make one more point. In 2014, the number of Americans who identified as politically independent reached an all-time high of 42%. I have to assume that that is continuing to grow. That's across the country and not just in New Mexico. In New Mexico, it's about 20%. But across the country, that to me would indicate that we do have a task before us as far as how we do our primaries. Otherwise, we're looking at an election process that really leaves us with a lot of people indeed feeling disenfranchised and the system somewhat corrupted.
Currently, there are 21 states that do offer open primaries. How did those states come about to allow for open primaries? And, you know, are there some success signs that it's working, and are there some flaws that we can look at to decide whether or not it could work for New Mexico?
Well, I think that, again, the distinction has to be made that in those 20 states, only two of them, I believe, maybe Alaska makes a third, but I believe it's just the two of California and Washington have the top two primaries. And for me, that distinction is huge because we go back to the concerns that Republicans and Democrats have of somebody showing up at their primary who's not really there in the best interest of that party, but who's there to just show up and vote as a spoiler or otherwise trying to mess with the system. And so I would say that the other open primary, you know, the states where those open primaries are located, are suffering from the hybrid, if you will, that you were asking about, Edmundo, the fact that that is an imperfect system. I'm not pretending that the top two is perfect. I suspect that somebody's going to figure out how to game that as well as we go along. And certainly there'll be people willing to look at their odds and go, okay, I'm going to vote for the lesser because I'm still trying to mess with the Republicans or the Democrats. But I would think that with only that one shot to make a difference as to who's going to be in the general election, more of us would, I expect, be making the choice to choose our vote our conscience as opposed to trying to be the spoiler. And there's a big difference between the way that kind of primary is operating and the way the other open primaries are operating and the way the primaries in close states like New Mexico are operating.
Tucker, what have you seen regarding open primaries in other states? How are they working? And is there something to be learned from the other states that are currently holding open primaries?
Yeah, I think absolutely there is. And as far as the top two system goes, I think there's a lot of problems that can go on with that one as well. There's a couple cases in California in 2014 where, you know, the two final candidates were both from the same party. And that's not really that much more of a satisfying answer for a lot of voters to see, well, you know, my final two choices are between this Democrat and that Democrat. That's not really all that much better, more preferable to the system we have right now. And as far as, you know, what else we see with open primaries and kind of the more traditional open primary system that most states use, not the top two system, but, you know, the open primary where, you know, in Texas or Mississippi or some of these states where Democrats and Republicans can cross over and vote in each other's primary, I think there's a lot of problems that can kind of arise from that. And I think there's a lot of, you know, especially in close elections, like, for example, Mississippi in 2014, there was the Senate primary campaign, Thad Cochran and Chris McDaniel. That was like a 50-50 race, very, very tight, decided by a couple hundred votes. And Democrats were being urged to vote in the primary in support of Cochran, and because he was a more moderate candidate. And when he won by a fraction of a percent, Republicans who supported McDaniel were apoplectic over what they perceived as kind of liberals stealing the election from him. I don't want that kind of thing to happen in New Mexico. I don't think that helps us as a system to have, you know, some of our voters in either party thinking that the election was stolen from them. I don't think that's helpful. So, I mean, I understand where Councilman Smith is coming from, but I think there's a lot more issues with open primary systems than he kind of wants to talk about.
575-646-2212. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter if you have a question. Let's go to Paul. Paul, good afternoon, and welcome to Voice of the Public. Paul.
Yes.
What's your question or comment, sir?
Yeah, I have two questions that I would like for the speakers to consider. One is a potential middle-of-the-road type of solution for what we're talking about here, and that is anyone who's registered as an independent could vote in a primary. Only one vote, can't vote in both primaries, but would make a decision to vote in either Republican or the Democrat side. They would get one vote. Again, they wouldn't vote in both. This would not be open to registered Democrats or registered Republicans, but it would enfranchise independent voters to weigh in on the Republican and Democratic candidates. And it would actually, in my mind, it would be more showing of what the general population thinks about, if you had two candidates, one in each party. So I'd like them to consider that. The second question I have is perhaps a different subject, but a few states have no preference on their ballot. And I think that is another way to enfranchise the voters. If they're dissatisfied with either of the candidates or either the party candidates, then they could express that. But they expressed or they exercised their due diligence in voting. I'd like for them to consider both of those, please.
Well, thank you, Paul. Let's go to Greg.
Certainly. Thank you. And your first question, Paul, the reality is that what you just described is basically how some of the open primaries already work, basically as a way of saying, okay, you're an independent voter, you get to vote, you're allowed to go to one or the other, never both, and choose to vote for a Republican or a Democrat. As far as your second question, and I think there are problems with that, but nonetheless, it is at least more enfranchising than simply saying you can't vote at all. But in the second question, I think that, you know, we're looking at where the process leaves people out. And I'm going to have to ask you to repeat the question because I'm sitting there going, okay, it was going to come back to me, but it didn't.
Regarding no preference.
Thank you. Well, that's the no confidence vote. And that has always been something that I think ought to be available to people, but it once again presumes in this instance that you're only going to be choosing between what the primaries have given to you, a Republican or a Democrat. And I have no problem with there being two Republicans in the general election, or two Democrats, or two independents, if indeed that's how the primaries result. But I do think that the process needs to include as many people as early as possible, as opposed to leaving people out in the cold and saying, too bad, so sad, you're not really part of the process because you haven't made this choice. So I would say that, yes, a no preference or a no confidence vote would certainly be something I think should be included, but I wouldn't consider that an equalizing piece.
Would you care to respond to that, Tucker? And by the way, this is Voice of the Public. Our guest is Councilman Greg Smith, and Tucker Keene, who is the Communications Director for the New Mexico Republican Party, and he is the Communications Director. So, Tucker, would you like to respond to that?
I still couldn't hear that question. Could you repeat it for me?
Regarding the no confidence vote or the no preference vote, whether that can be allowed in New Mexico and the middle of the road compromise.
Instead of allowing crossover, so Democrats couldn't vote in the Republican primary or vice versa, but independents could choose to vote in either of those two still separate primaries.
Second point, Councilman Smith, I'd say that, I mean, independents are still a very kind of different group of voters than Republicans or Democrats are, and that can have real effects on the actual outcome. If you looked at how the presidential race has been going so far, you'd see that in open primaries, Bernie Sanders is doing better in the Democrats among the Democrats than Hillary is, and that's kind of one of the issues. I mean, and she's doing better in the closed primaries, and there's a similar dynamic going on in the Republican side. I would just say that, again, I don't think there's any perfect system here, but I don't think that I can understand kind of where that caller's coming from on that, but I'm still not convinced that that's going to be a better option than what we've got going on right now. And as far as the no confidence vote, I haven't put a whole lot of thought into that myself. I can certainly understand the thinking behind it and why we might need one. And I think in a couple states, I want to say Nevada has one. Is that right? I feel like I think I saw that a couple years ago. I could be wrong. I mean, I can understand why, what the impetus to do, the kind of the reasoning behind wanting one of those, but I don't think it's really something we need in New Mexico.
Okay, Tucker, when we come back, we'd like to talk a little bit about party crashing. One of the concerns that, you know, open primaries versus closed primaries that's been brought up, and we'll discuss Operation Chaos from 2008 and see how that impacted the election. You're listening to Voice of the Public on KRWG and KRWG.org. My name is Edmundo Resendez, 575-646-2212. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter if you have some questions. We'll be back after this.
As every Wednesday for the Silver City Report with guests from the Silver City Daily Press. Catch up on the most important stories in Silver City, Grant County, and the region every Wednesday on Morning Edition at 8:44 and during All Things Considered at 6:44. Or listen anytime online at krwg.org. Just click on the Silver City Report in the radio section.
They said that 3 hours of Dry River Jazz wasn't enough. They said they needed one more hour with Trevor Hodgkins on KRWG Las Cruces and KRXG Silver City. Well, that's what they're gonna get. Dry River Jazz, now 8 to midnight on Saturdays.
Welcome to Voice of the Public. I'm Edmundo Resendez. 575-646-2212. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter. My guests are Councilman Greg Smith from Las Cruces, and also calling us from Albuquerque, we have the New Mexico Republican Party Communications Director, Tucker Keene. And Tucker, we have a question from our social media. And Samantha, good afternoon, and thank you for joining us.
Good afternoon, Edmundo. Yes, this question is coming to us from Renaison77. And he says, as an independent voter, I can't vote in the primaries, and this renders us dependents. But he wants to know what he needs to do from here to June if he does want to be able to vote in that primary.
Well, thank you, Samantha. Tucker, you want to, you know, what is an independent voter to do when they want to vote, but they have until June to decide what they need to do?
Party registration.
Can you start again, Tucker?
You can switch your party registration.
And that's basically it. Will they have enough time, though, to be able to do that? We're in March.
I'm not a registrar myself. I don't have the deadlines in front of me right now, so I don't know if it might be too late for that. But, switching your party registration is very easy. You can do it online now. And I honestly, Councilman Smith earlier was comparing this kind of disenfranchisement to, you know, past disenfranchisement based on age or race or gender or, you know, or property ownership or, you know, wealth or the poll tax or something. I don't really think the two are comparable because, party registration is entirely a choice. You can't go online and, you know, and change your, and register with the New Mexico, you know, Secretary of State and say, well, now I'm a man and I can vote in the primary. You know, that wasn't an option back then. But it is an option here and it's very easy. So I don't really want to call this, I don't really consider this disenfranchisement because it's based on kind of the choice of the individual voter.
Well, you know, again, looking at this election, there seems to be a lot of excitement. They're having record ratings across the cable channels for the debates, and there's a lot of people that have genuine interest. And for independents to be sitting on the sidelines, Councilman, it's got to be pretty frustrating right now.
Well, it is, actually, and I certainly have people saying to me, all you need to do is register with one party or the other. But if you feel... And I have registered as an independent, not so much because, and I do think that there are certainly issues that need to be taken up with both parties, but really that was my protest vote and something that I felt would help draw attention to the fact that we have disenfranchised people. Because for some folks, saying, just say you're a Republican or just say you're a Democrat is like saying, just deny your last name or just deny where you come from or what you believe. So some people feel very strongly about the fact that neither party speaks for them. And so to say just sign up for a party so you can vote is really, I think, really it's treating it rather capriciously, frankly. And earlier you talked about a hybrid idea, and since there is this concern about people coming in and voting in the different elections, I thought, you know, maybe, and nobody's mentioned this before, it just occurred to me while I was sitting here, so it may have all kinds, it may be fraught with all kinds of problems. But one of the things that occurred, or this thing that occurred to me is, well then, okay, maybe then the there should be three ballots, a Democratic ballot, a Republican ballot, and an independent ballot in the primaries. And then if you're an independent, you go in and you actually get to vote for who's available on the Republican side, who's available on the Democratic side, and who else might be running who's not affiliated with each. I'm sure there would still be problems with the party regulars who say, well, then you're still getting a chance to vote in my primary. But I again come back to the fact that if you want public dollars to pay for your primaries and you want to keep them exclusive to one party or the other, then some other accommodation is going to have to be made. Otherwise, I have a very big problem, and a lot of people have a very big problem, with paying our tax money to an exclusive club.
Tucker, let's take a call from Monica. Monica, good afternoon, and welcome to Voice of the Public.
Hello?
Yes, Monica. What's your question or comment?
Yeah, my comment. First of all, I totally agree with Greg Smith, what he said earlier, what he said just a minute ago, and with Randy, quite frankly, as well. And what Tucker said at the very beginning of the program, that is, that it would not serve the party, is so indicative of the Republican Party that the party allegiance is more important than the people and the voice of the people. And I'm not saying the Democrats aren't in that category as well. I'm just saying that it's very obvious when you look at the debates right now and the Donald Trump situation against the moderate conservatives, why people are disenchanted and why they feel they're disenfranchised and they vote for someone that maybe otherwise they would not, because it's the party for the party and not for the people. And I think the independent voices that need to be heard as well are being just pushed aside. And I think Tucker in his statement made that very clear. And that's essentially what I wanted to comment on.
Tucker, why are people feeling disenfranchised? In wanting to leave the Republican or the Democratic Party and switch to, you know, the independent, I mean, so much so that they're willing to give up their vote. I mean, what does the Republican Party, for example, need to do to bring them back?
Well, I mean, I think it's absolutely true that there's a lot of people that are at this point kind of saying, I'm kind of fed up with both parties and you know, looking, I guess, towards other options or towards saying I'm an independent and not... I, as far as the specific reasons, I'm sure it's kind of a wide variety, and there's a lot of different reasons, and each individual is going to be different there. But I don't really think that open primaries are going to solve that. I mean, like I said earlier, with the, you know, kind of the Operation Chaos type thing, that if you think people were fed up with the parties, with, you know, the Republican establishment or with the Democrat establishment before, just wait until you let, you know, liberals and moderates pick Republican nominees, and just wait until you let conservatives and moderates pick Democrat nominees. That's just going to add to even more kind of sense of disenfranchisement by conservative voters and by liberal voters who expect their party to kind of represent their values. And the less they do that, and I think that open primaries kind of hurt that, the less that the parties kind of represent a specific set of values, the more disenfranchised people who hold those values are going to feel.
You're listening to Voice of the Public on KRWG and KRWG.org. Good afternoon. I'm at Edmundo Resendez, 575-646-2212. And you can also find us on Facebook and Twitter. Let's talk about party crashing. You know, critics of the open primary system claim it allows members of one political party to vote in their rivals party's contest in the hopes of encouraging the nomination of the weakest candidate. Has this been proven, Tucker? And, for example, did Operation Chaos, an operation that was set forth by conservative radio commentator Rush Limbaugh, accomplish party crashing in 2008?
I think there's certainly some evidence that it helped. I think especially in Texas, there was, if I recall correctly, Hillary won Texas in 2008. and it wasn't necessarily a done deal that was going to happen. And I think there's certainly some evidence that this has happened. I mean, and even if there isn't evidence, I mean, if you think a party doesn't want to affect the strength of their opposition's nominee, you're crazy. I mean, we do it all the time. If you look at Claire McCaskill, senator from Missouri, a couple months ago or a year ago now, maybe put out an article talking about how she did everything she could to help Todd Akin through the primary in Missouri, and obviously he lost by a large margin. And if you think that an open primary wouldn't encourage more of that, more Democrats to urge and say, you know, go vote for the weaker candidate, I mean, I think that's the most obvious, you know, result to me. And I've even seen some of that with Bernie Sanders this year. You know, a number of Republicans have been, you know, kind of urging support for Bernie Sanders in the Democratic Party, in the Democratic primary, because they feel he's the easier candidate to beat. And, I mean, that's, I guess if you voted for an open primary system and you've got one in your state, that's fair game, but I think it's a little unfair to the members of that party, and that's why one of the reasons I'm against it in New Mexico.
Charles, good afternoon, and welcome to Voice of the Public. You have a question. Charles, you're up. Okay, well, I guess Charles is not up. Well, you know, to continue, Councilman Smith, with, you know, party crashing, what's your view on that? I mean, is that healthy? Is it unhealthy for our democratic process to have a member of the Democratic Party going to the members, to the, you know, election of the Republican Party and picking the weakest member? And, you know, you just hear talk about this. And again, it really became very public in 2008 when Operation Chaos, you know, started happening. And you've been hearing whispers of this happening.
Well, and I don't think it's completely a red herring, but I will say that it is already, I believe, endemic in the process. It's the kind of dirty tricks that is already happening. And so I would say that to hold that against top two open primaries, or top two primaries, I think they're also referred to as blanket open primaries, or nonpartisan blanket primaries. The reality is that we already have that happening to some degree, and I frankly think that if you're looking at a situation where your vote is going to be this one shot in a primary where everybody is on the same ballot, you're going to be less likely, I would think, to throw away your vote trying to be the spoiler, as opposed to, or else you're really confident that your person's going to win, in which case, why wouldn't you vote for him or her anyway? So I think that it's really not a very valid argument to say that top two primaries would encourage that. I do think that the other kinds of open primaries basically feed into what already is a problem. And so, you know, my end goal would be to engage more voters, to have more voters feel like their votes count, and to feel like, you know what, I'm participating in this, as opposed to I'm trying to be a player in some sort of game. You know, voting your conscience really should be the bottom line, and being able to vote your conscience.
Samantha,
What I'd say to that is that, I mean, a top two primary, that has its own problems. Like I said, sometimes the result can be two members of the same party fighting against each other. But more importantly, for a lot of voters, they don't necessarily vote. Some voters don't pay a whole lot of attention to the process, and they just vote straight ticket. And, you know, so they vote for all the Republicans, they vote for all the Democrats. And a top two system kind of gets in the way of their line of thinking. They're saying, you know, well, my vote, I'm a Republican, I want to be able to vote for every Republican.
In the old days, we called that pulling the lever.
Pulling the lever.
But if they vote straight ticket, if they pull the lever for one party or the other, they kind of expect that to mean a certain thing. To say, you know, the Republicans, they have these certain sets of values, and the Democrats, they have these certain sets of values. And when they have to, when they're, you know, forced to choose between two members of the same party, if they're, you know, Republican and there are two Republicans on that final ballot in the general election, or if they're Republican and there are two Democrats on that final ballot, they don't necessarily, I mean, they look at that party queue as kind of like, you know, a sign of what they should do. Who they should vote for, and if they don't have that, they're going to feel disenfranchised, because they're going to say, well, wait a second, I expected the ability to vote for a Republican in this race. And that didn't happen.
And I'm not sure that's so different from, unless you're suggesting that they don't bother to vote in the primaries in the first place and they're just waiting.
I mean, it's pretty clear that there's a much higher turnout in the general election than a primary, regardless of whether you have an open primary system or a closed primary system.
But there are
a lot of voters who, you know, Republican voters who don't vote in the Republican primary but will vote for the Republican in the general, and I'm sure the same is for the same is true for Democrat voters.
Okay, let's go to Samantha real quick because we're wrapping up on time here. Samantha Sonner from our social media desk, you have a question or a comment.
Yes, we actually have an email that came in to our feedback@NMSU email address. And this comes from Vicky, who said she became a not registered voter when she became too embarrassed to align her name with either party. She accepted that she would not be able to vote in a primary, but didn't realize until recently that parties do not pay for their primaries. Because all taxpaying registered voters pay for those primaries, that she believes that they should be able to vote in them. And if they are exclusive clubs, she feels that the parties should pay for them themselves.
Either of you want to take up on that?
Well, that's basically my point.
Tucker?
I guess, I see where she's coming from, but, I don't think it's that, I mean, let's see. So she's concerned about the government paying for these primaries?
Correct.
Again, I'd argue that it's not a very heavy burden to place on voters to pick one party or the other. And then I'd also say that, you know, if you think that's the only... An open primary system, the only kind of legal question, or I guess the constitutional question, or, you know, of the disenfranchisement or that, there's also the First Amendment question to consider here. And an open primary system, the parties have rights of free association to kind of support, to kind of govern who they support and all that. An open primary system forces the party to kind of associate and stand with behind the positions of candidates that... may not have been chosen by those who associate with that party. And this kind of goes against their First Amendment rights. So I'd just add that in there as kind of another point. We haven't brought that up yet. But as far as if you think it's wrong that the state government pays for primaries, then absolutely go ahead and lobby your state representative and your state senator to try to change that law. But I don't think it's a big problem.
I think the First Amendment right argument is something of a stretch. Basically, we don't allow our public... agencies paid for with tax dollars to do a lot of the things that you're asking the government to do with the primaries. So I would say that perhaps you might want to leave that particular argument out of it. Thank you.
Oh, well, let's wrap things up by talking about where do we go from here? You know, obviously it's a discussion that came up in the legislature. It's something that, again, this election in particular has really drawn the attention of the electorate, that people that want to vote and want to have a voice. Where do we go from here, Tucker?
Well, if there are voters who want to push this open primary system forward, they've got every right to petition their government to petition their legislators to keep bringing this issue up in the legislature, and I'm sure it will continue to come up in the legislature, and we'll continue to debate it. And maybe this eventually comes to some sort of long-term solution, and one side convinces the other side they're right, but... You know, we'll see what happens.
Greg?
I think that's essentially it, other than the possibility that it gets settled in a court case. As I said, that currently is also working its way through the court system. But yes, I think the public is speaking out on the topic. We are hearing from people, and that is the inevitable result, whether it's fought along the way by the entrenched party regulars or whether it's embraced as this is the fairest thing to do. That's the question. So sooner or later, I suspect we will come to some sort of process that allows more enfranchisement of all the voters.
So what's the message for voters right now? What do we want to tell them, you know, regarding the upcoming primary? You know, what should they go out and do? You know, they have a decision to make.
Maybe they should be asking their candidates, if they're still affiliated with a party, how their candidates feel about the open election, particularly, as I have said several times, the top two primary process. Maybe they should be asking that question of the candidates.
Tucker, I'll let you have the last word.
Yeah, I'd say the same thing. If they want to, you know, bring that issue up with the candidates, they're free to do so.
Well, Tucker Green from the New Mexico Republican Party Communications Director, I want to thank you very much for staying with us the entire hour. And Councilmember Greg Smith, thank you very much from Las Cruces for being here today on Voice of the Public. Just remember, you can continue the conversation on social media, on Facebook and Twitter, and let us know if you have any ideas for any future programs on Voice of the Public. We'd love to hear from you. You can also email us at feedback@nmsu.edu. Coming up next, we have Leora Seitlin with Intermezzo. That's coming up in just one moment. At 4 o'clock, we bring you the latest in news from All Things Considered, right here on KRWG and KRWG.org, KRWG Las Cruces, and KRXG Silver City. Thank you for joining us today on Voice of the Public. I'm your host, Edmundo Resendez.